And so this translates into this kind of thing. What's happened? I've blanked it. That's what's happened. Yeah. Right. Fruits. This is the kind of quantity and types of fruit one might think about eating in a day. It focuses on berries because they tend to be the low glycemic ones. The grapefruit's all right too. And then we're into the more glycemic ones like kiwis and nectarines and the banana. And you wouldn't want to overload on those too much. But that's the kind of thing every day you should be getting inside you. That's the kind of thing our body expects. We've got a slow thing here. Now, as for the salads, again, I've just shown you the ingredients here, but we're talking about the volumes here. The kind of ingredients you can think of, well, the cucumbers, the tomatoes, the mushrooms, there happens to be a leek there, lettuce, radish, whatever. That's a full-size dinner plate, by the way. It's not just a little tiny portion. That mushroom is a very big one. And it's got some mackerel straight out of the tin on top. And that's the kind of thing that would make a good meal every day, once a day. I'm not going to talk about main meals. There's Nicole's cookbook's full of all sorts of things you can create, but actually all you're talking about is, hey, you know, you have a piece of fish and you have the green beans and the Brussels sprouts and the cauliflower or broccoli and so on. You have a load of that. It doesn't have to be very complicated. Or you can make more complicated things. You can make the hunter's stew that she's got in there, made from venison and things like that. Or if you can get it squirrel. I get people again from Oklahoma saying, oh yeah, we got lots of squirrel in the larder, you know, we go out and shoot them every day. And then for the desserts, you can actually have all kinds of range. Again, Nicole has invented quite a lot of stuff, but, you know, there we've got some strawberries and a chocolate mousse to die for, and a glass of red wine in the background. Again, I don't say you have to have the red wine. If you don't drink, by all means, leave it out. But, you know, you can have actually quite sophisticatedly. And we have dinner guests who never realize they've eaten differently, actually, when they've been through the whole meal. They just realize afterwards, well, there wasn't any bread to eat with the meal, you know, that kind of thing. And there wasn't any rice, you know, why wasn't there any rice there? But if they hadn't had their attention drawn to it, they don't realize it, and they don't ask for it. So it is possible to eat actually quite normally, just navigating your way through the kinds of foodstuffs that we have. And I'm not asking you to go out and buy organic. I think it's a good thing to do, but that's not the main thing. The main thing is to actually eat them and to not eat the things I've just talked about. Now let's talk about one or two other aspects of lifestyle. Again, we saw that sand bushman. He was out there stark naked under a tropical sun. And this is how they lived their lives back then. 365 days a year, they were stark naked under a tropical sun for eons. Now you can imagine that if this was the case, then our bodies came to depend on it. And we now know that indeed, sunshine is essential human nourishment. And the tragedy today is that we've got so freaked out by the sunscreen manufacturers that we think sunshine is something dangerous. We think it's worse than nuclear radiation. And we're suffering from sunshine deficiency, terrible deficiency diseases of sunshine. This is a map of colon cancer incidence in the United States. The red is where it's highest, and blue, the bluer it gets, it's the least. And you see that the further north you go, and this is kind of broad brush stuff, it's just straws in the wind, broad brush stuff, and the further north you go, the more likely you are to have colon cancer. And the same maps can be drawn, are drawn, for the various other kinds of cancers, the lung cancers, breast cancers, and so on, and similar ones for Europe too. It also depends on just what you do with your life. Most of these red clusters are in the cities, the heavily urbanized areas of the eastern, northeastern United States. People in Wyoming, further west, are still in the blue area. They're cowboys. They're out in the sunshine all the time. They don't get colon cancer in the same way, even though they have terrible diets. They're eating beef, or, well, they're eating moose and what have you as well. Sunshine deficiency undermines the immune system. It's the vitamin D connection. But it's not good enough to take the vitamin D in the diet. The body needs to take it when it wants it. And vitamin D is actually a portmanteau word for a number of different chemicals. It needs to have them in the right kinds of ratios, and it makes it as it needs it from the sunshine. So the message is, yes, we do need sunshine, particularly if you live in a place like London, which is 55 degrees north, the winter time. The sun is never strong enough in the winter time to actually do anything, do any good. You actually have to get it after about April, May time through to September time and actually get out when the sun's overhead. You have to get it, or at least it's striking at a high, a good angle. And you just have to be sensible. Don't burn, fine, but you do need to get that sunshine into your skin, into your faces. That's very important. There's a whole range of other diseases which also come into that picture, which we haven't got time to talk about today. I talked about how both men and women would probably walk 4 or 5 miles a day while they're doing what they're doing. The men would also jog, perhaps for hours on end, tracking down, or even days, tracking down a wounded animal until they got it. And sometimes they'd have to run very fast to escape one and climb a tree or something like that. But the whole thing comes down to a pattern of physical activity to which we're naturally adapted, which our body expects to have. It's come to rely on it. If it was always there, it's come to rely on it. And what we do today, of course, is not do the physical activity that the body expects. Now, what are the consequences of it? Well, again, there's a whole range of consequences, but when we're talking about cancers, there's two that I'd just like to pick out. And that is this. We're fairly familiar with the idea that we've got a blood circulation system and a pump, the heart, which circulates the blood. But we also have another circulation system called the lymphatic system. And the lymphatic system is responsible, amongst other things, for taking immune system cells where they're needed to fight an infection or to fight a cancer, for example, carry away the toxic waste and dispose of it. Now, this lymphatic system doesn't have a pump of its own. It relies entirely on our muscles working the whole time to pump and keep it circulating. And if we're not doing that, then it tends to stagnate. Now, many people, most of us perhaps in the West, we lead quite sedentary lives. I do. And you have to work at actually getting that muscular activity. Now, you know, we talk about having half an hour or an hour as exercise a day, and sure, I go out jogging, I play squash and things like that. I make sure that I get a half an hour to an hour of exercise fairly intense a day. That's quite important. Of course, what happens with the other 23 hours? We're sitting down at a computer or something like that. And I'll give you a tip. I discovered this, and I don't know why it took me so long, but I discovered this about 10 years ago, that you can actually work at your computer standing up. And it has a number of advantages. Not only are you standing up here looking at your computer, you have to have it on a box or something, just the right height, but it gives you good posture. Instead of being hunched over like this, you're up there like this, much better. Don't get the neck strains, the muscles and aches and pains. And in addition, the effort of holding your body upright is using up calories. You're burning up 3 times the number of calories you would do if you're sitting down. And at the same time, you're kind of working your body around. You're getting this kind of activity going. It doesn't have to be a lot, it just needs to be there. Of course, you're also thinking more alertly. This is one of the little things that the company psychologist will tell you. If you've got a tough phone call to make, stand up for it and speak standing up, because you'll be more powerful and aggressive. It helps you to think clearly, I find. So that's just a little tip. But the physical activity is part of what the human biochemistry expects, the immune system expects. And in addition, the physical activity, particularly the slightly more strenuous one, is important because it generates various kinds of chemicals, various kinds of signals to the immune system to tune it up. And again, if you're a couch potato, it doesn't get those signals. Your immune system is just untuned. So physical activity, we've known it all along, but yes, it is a vital part of the human for human health, for very good reasons. That is our heritage. from our ancestors, because they always did it. Our bodies came to expect it and rely on it. I'll talk about one last aspect of lifestyle, and that's stress. Now, most people say in the Western world, hey, yeah, I feel stressed. They've got too much to do. And of course, there are a number of activities that are designed to try and relieve stress. Meditation, yoga, hot baths, whatever, physical activity, fine. What I want to perhaps raise your consciousness about are ways in which the way we live our lives today are cross-threaded with the way that our savanna natures expect and give us stress. I'll give you an example. When you show pictures of a panorama of a landscape, a whole series of different kinds of panoramas to various tribes or peoples around the world, Eskimos, Japanese, English people, Africans. This is the kind of one they pick out as being the most reassuring, restful, pleasing. What do you know? It's a picture of a savanna homeland. And the psychologists have, it's almost as though we've got a program, a little circuit in our brain running the whole time, which says, I recognize home. This is home. And the psychologist has sort of deconstructed this. It says, yeah, there, what is it? There's you've got these animals grazing peacefully. That means there's no danger, no nasty predators around. And that would be reassuring for us too. It's wide open spaces. You can see danger coming from a long way away. That's reassuring too. And of course, there are the occasional trees which you can up which you can shin for safety if necessity arises. But the interesting thing is that when people can control their landscape, when they can create a landscape which they think is going to be pleasing, this is the kind of thing they do. This is a typical country park. This is Woburn, but it could be Richmond, it could be any number of country parks. And what do you see? They've created the grassland, the peacefully grazing animals, and the occasional tree. Something that speaks to our deep-seated natures. And what we do today is live in places that are nothing like that a lot of the time. It's very well documented, for example, that children are much more likely to have bad behavior, ADHD, whatever, if they live in concrete jungles rather than in places which have green open spaces. All kinds of mental stressful problems are going on, perhaps subconsciously. You don't necessarily walk around saying, oh, I feel stressed because this isn't a green parkland. But it's there nibbling away at your stress levels, and stress depresses the immune system. Yes. I'll give you another example. I spend a lot of time in places which have sunshine and palm trees. And these are places where people like to retire to. And in particular, there are a lot of grandmothers. Now, grandmothers, back there in Pleistocene times, I didn't have time to mention this, but they would be staying behind at the campsite looking after the older children while the younger mums went off doing their foraging. And it seems that this has been a vital part of human survival, that grandmothers look after the older children. So much so that it's actually programmed into their brains. Not everyone, but certainly as a generality, as a generalization, and we're dealing in generalizations all the time here, this is something that's there. And we see it the whole time, whether it's in Cyprus or in Palm Springs or wherever, which are retirement places, we see the grandmothers who've retired thousands of miles away from the grandchildren hankering to get back and be with the grandchildren. And it's not happening. And that is putting stress on two groups of people. It's putting stress on the grandparents, and the grandfathers don't care so much, but it's the grandmothers who really want to be there. They're stressed out. They're feeling unhappy, stressed. And of course, the parents are feeling unhappy and stressed because they're having to look after the kids instead of the grandmother. And these are the kinds of things that are cutting across our savanna-bred natures, which sometimes we can actually make sensible decisions about once you're aware of them. That you perhaps you don't retire so far away from the kids. It might be nice to, you know, I would certainly advocate living where there's sunshine and palm trees. It's part of the normal human, healthy human lifestyle. But there's a compromise being made. Maybe you just have to stay with the grandkids because ultimately that's what's more important. And these are the kinds of things. Now, in my book, I talk about a lot more of them. I mean, our workplaces are totally dysfunctional. After all, these hunter-gatherers were only working 15 to 18 hours a week, and we're working 40 hours a week. It's crazy. And they were actually doing something that made them feel good. This is what life was about, was feeding the kids. But, you know, we're working at something which is quite divorced from actually producing, putting food in front of the kids. We're having to do all kinds of unpleasant things. Now, it may well be that we happen to have a job, and perhaps many people in this room do have jobs which give them that kind of satisfaction, but the vast majority of people don't. For them, the workplace is a place of unhappiness, which they only want to get away from as fast as they can, and then find their harmony and peace. If it's going fishing, or if it's going on a cycle race, or whatever it is, they find it outside the workplace. And you know, workplaces are totally dysfunctional for a great number of reasons. And the way we torture ourselves with parenting, again, is something which cuts across the way our lifestyles are intended to be. We now got to the point, and again, it's happened largely in my lifetime, that parents are now going, they think they have to be parenting machines for 24 hours a day. Whereas they should be leading them with the grandmothers. And the grandmothers, of course, they weren't playing with the kids very much. They were just making sure that if there was a rattlesnake around, they just got rid of it. But the kids were running around in the bush and looking after themselves. So there's a whole range of issues to do with stressing ourselves, which sometimes we can, once you're aware of them, you can take control of it, or at least in some kind of way modify it. Okay, I'm going to have to wrap up in a second. Yeah, indeed, it's been an hour. Hasn't it flown fast? I'm going to have to wrap up in a second. Now, I've only been able to tell you 10% of what there is to know, and I'll just put this up while I'm talking. That's a summary of what I've been telling you about. I've only been able to tell you 10% of what there is to know, and you'll perhaps only remember 10% of that, but all is not lost. All I've said today, and a whole lot more, is in my book, Deadly Harvest. I have my website, www.jeffbond.com, very easy to find, and I do a monthly briefing, and if anybody is interested, it's normally by subscription, but if anybody is interested in receiving a complimentary issue for a year, then just sign up at the back there for it, and we'll make sure you get a briefing on it. And I will now leave you just with a couple of thoughts. What I've said must sound pretty daunting. Now, let's not kid around. If you have a cancer or recovering from one, you've had the treatment, it's a fight to the death between you and the cancer. Either you survive or the cancer does. And you can't really afford to compromise. You've really got to go cold turkey on it. But if you are healthy, like Nicole or me, for example, well, you can afford to bend the rules just a little bit. You can get within the body's comfort zone. And I talk about the 80-15-5 rule. If 80% of what you're doing is totally conforming, then 15% can be slightly off. It can be the camembert and the red wine. And 5%, well, that's when it's Christmas time and you've got the Christmas pud or whatever. That's when you can let it go a little bit. You know, really, be really sinful. But just know what you're playing with. You're playing with fire when you do that. And I'll leave you with a second thought, and it's what I say at the end of my talks to the doctors. I say, okay, you're a doctor. You've got the patient in front of you who's got the cancer or the heart disease. And you say to the patient, okay, we're going to patch you up. We're going to patch you up. But understand this. What you've been doing up till now has given you what you've got now. What are you going to change in the future so it doesn't come back? Of course, that's where I come in. Thank you very much.